Our first case this morning is Great American Insurance Company versus Hinkle Contracting, number 12-1014. Mr. Hinkle.
Yes, Your Honor.
Pleased to hear from you, sir. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. May it please the court. This case is before you because the district court ignored and strayed from long-established law of federal arbitrability as established by not only this court, but a majority of the circuits. We have here an uncontested subcontract that incorporates a subcontract that is incorporated into the performance bond, and the subcontract contains the arbitration clause. There's no issue of state law here. What is at issue is the scope of the arbitration clause. This appeal is all about the scope of the clause. The reason it's a scope issue is because we know that there are issues arising out of these documents that are going to arbitration. That is uncontested. The question is, all issues or some? And since scope is the issue, we look to the federal law of arbitrability, not state law. And when we do that, we are treading on familiar ground for this court. This court has been a standard bearer ever since Moses H. Cone in 1981 for the substantive law of federal arbitrability. And there is not one decision cited to you in these briefs where a court, where the Fourth Circuit has declined to enforce an arbitration clause that is incorporated by reference into the contract documents. Now, I can stand here and go through with you all of the principles that this court has articulated over the years, and I'll try to do that very quickly because I know that these principles are well known.
Now, you represent Hinkle Contracting, right?
Yes, sir.
And you're the general contractor?
Yes, sir.
And the obligee?
Yes, sir.
And then the Chapman Martin excavation is the sub.
Yes, sir.
And the principal in Great American is the surety.
That's correct.
Performance bond. And it all involves a road building contract over in Mingo County?
Yes, sir.
On the King Cole Highway?
Yes, sir.
How many miles is it of road they're going to build over there?
Well, they've actually finished, Your Honor, and I think it's about 8 miles total. It was hard going. And I think I should mention to you, since you brought up who all the parties are, that since the filing of these briefs, Chapman Martin is now in bankruptcy, Chapter 7.
That's the subcontractor?
Yes, sir. And we think that goes to one of the issues before you, which was an error below, and that is...
Are we allowed to consider that? It's not in the record?
I think it's a matter of public record. And I think in all candor, I should tell you that it affects one of the arguments before you. Because one of the arguments before you is the selection of arbitrators. And Judge Goodwin was concerned that there was nothing specific in the subcontract that specifically said what the surety got to do with respect to selection of arbitrators.
Well, they couldn't select an arbitrator?
That's what his concern was.
How do you get around that?
Well, our point to him was, and we think it's the correct point, is that the CPR rules, which are incorporated into the contract, provide the means for the selection of additional arbitrators. But here's the point now, Judge King, and that is, with Chapman Martin now in bankruptcy, everything resides in the surety. It's all kind of a moot point now because any selection of arbitrators is going to be done by the surety anyway.
But that's not really the main point that you're relying on. You're talking about the significant relationship, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am.
And the terms of the subcontract. And if we look at it on that level, then that other concern doesn't really come into play, does it?
Well, no, ma'am, it doesn't. And the significant relationship test, which began in this circuit with American Recovery and other cases since then, basically says that you don't have to decide which contract, the bond or the subcontract, does the claim or defense stand on. Instead, you look to see if there is a significant relationship between the two. And we feel that was another error that Judge Goodwin made, because he did say that this all arises out of the bond.
And you're saying that the terms of the subcontractor at issue here, in terms of the extent of performance, the whether there were material alterations, and that that necessarily establishes a significant relationship, is that a fair statement?
Yes, ma'am. It's if you look at Great American's complaint, an amended complaint, you will see over 40 references to the subcontract, and you will see where they have alleged such things as we breached the subcontract, that we refused to pay monies owed to the subcontractor that now would benefit the surety, that we did not have the right under the subcontract to assess liquidated damages against the subcontractor, that there was a material change to the subcontract that was not achieved in accordance with the subcontract. It's sort of a but-for test. But for the alleged breaches of the subcontract, would there be a claim? They're inextricably intertwined. And under the significant relationship test, which Judge Goodwin mentioned but did not follow, then we don't get into an argument, a dispositive argument, about whether or not the claim arises or defense arises out of one or the other. So if I could deal with some of the other errors that we think were committed below. One is again, these are scope issues. And one is incorporation by reference. American Recovery for this circuit says that the incorporation by reference is alive and well. And there are at least 9 other circuits that follow the principle that incorporation, that an arbitration clause can be enforced if it is incorporated into a document that is related to the contract or the claim in question. And the Peabody decision, also from this circuit, says that there must be absolute clarity that the claim was not intended to be covered. All doubts are to be resolved in favor of arbitration.
That's our case you're talking about?
Yes, sir. Several of them.
You mentioned one particular case.
Yeah, American Recovery, going all the way back to the J.J. Ryan case, Long versus Silver. I could go on and on with the times that this court has articulated the principles of favorable treatment of arbitration. Judge Goodwin, I believe it was at page 12 of his opinion, said there is a strong argument. Strong argument, that was his term, that this would be arbitrable. And we say that that very frank statement is the end of the story, because under your jurisprudence, if there is any defensible argument that the clause applies, then under the federal law of arbitration, you resolve all doubts. And only if there are positive assurances that the clause is not susceptible to interpretation in any way, would you deny arbitration? And that gets us to the point about this clause.
When you say this clause, you're talking about the language of the performance bond that says which subcontract is by reference made a party of.
No, sir, I'm talking about the arbitration clause itself.
You're talking about the arbitration clause of the subcontract.
Yes, sir, and I would like to review that with you. Now, I have to, in the case of full disclosure, I drafted this clause. So if there's any problem with it, I take responsibility. But I think I did a good job. Because what we said was, first of all, in 16.1, was that all disputes, all claims, disputes, controversies, and matters in question arising out of or related to this agreement. Now, let me digress just for a minute to say arising out of or related to this agreement, first of all, has been held to be a broad, expansive clause. And it is very common language in the construction industry. If you look at standard contract documents, say, published by the American Institute of Architects, used all around the country for years, you will find that language. So it is not only broad and expansive, it is customary. But you will not find, in any of the cases cited to you, a clause like the one in this agreement that is stronger in favor of binding the surety than this clause. And why do I say that? Because of section 16.2E. And 16.2E consists of four sentences.
And very long sentences.
Well, the first one's not too long, Your Honor, but but my point is, lawyers can be windy, but there are four references in that paragraph to the surety. Four. And the only sentence that it is not mentioned in is the very first, which says that if a disputed claim arises and it's not resolved by mediation or negotiation, Hinkle Contracting has the exclusive option to either have the dispute decided by a court or by arbitration in accordance with the rules and so forth. And then you get into other things, and that's where the language about the surety comes in. I don't think there is a single case that has been cited to you where the court has upheld the arbitration clause that says, against the surety, where the surety is expressly mentioned. This clause is stronger than any of them. And if, and my submission to you, therefore, is that if the courts, looking at the scope jurisprudence of the FAA, say that incorporation by reference of just the clause itself is enough, surely a clause that is stronger than those that have been construed in those other cases where the word surety is expressly used four times, is, if it is not sufficient clarity, then it is at least a defensible argument. And if I could just make one more point on this, because my time is getting short, but I want to refer the court to its Peabody decision. Because there, this court, the Peabody was decided in 2012, I think, earlier this year. This court affirmed some language from Justice Breyer in the Kaplan case, First Options versus Kaplan, where Justice Breyer talked about the permissive, when we know that there is a permissive attitude towards arbitration, then there has to be absolute clarity. The parties know this. The parties know, or they're charged with knowing, the permissive feeling of the federal courts on arbitrability. And so when you know that, you must insist on clarity before you can rule out the arbitration clause. And we submit to you that that clarity is here, and that for the sake of predictability and precedent, that should be adhered to here.
Hey, Mr. Hinkle, you know, Judge Goodwin's a very, very good judge.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I've been looking at this with your argument, trying to figure out where you think he went off the track.
Okay.
Because he had to have gone off the track in order for your argument to be correct.
Yes, ma'am.
And so would you tell me whether it is his reliance on West Virginia contract law? Do you think that's where the case, from your perspective, went off the track? Or what other place in his analysis, do you think that he deviated and chose the wrong course?
I'll be glad to. I think, first of all, he gave too much deference to state law when state law was not implicated by this. I think, secondly, he relied on a minority outlier decision of the Eighth Circuit, Agro, which really is not a scope case at all. It was a question there of whether or not there was an agreement to arbitrate in the first place. But Agro is a minority position. I see my time is about up.
Go ahead and finish answer to Judge King.
All right. I don't think that he followed the significant relationship test because he fell into that argument about is it the bond or the subcontract. I think also he latched on to this dissent in the Jewish Federation case out of the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit held that incorporation by reference applied and that the surety was bound. He opted for the dissent. And then, in sort of an irony, he then picked up on the Fifth Circuit case in Tittle, which was a case that involved the Enron scandal and insurance claims that arose out of that. It didn't even involve a surety bond. So we were sort of puzzled that he would reject the majority in the Fifth Circuit on a case that was on point factually and embrace an unrelated case from the Fifth Circuit that had nothing to do with sureties or subcontracts.
Okay, thank you, sir. I did answer the question. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
You have some time saved. Mr. Martin. Pleased to hear from you, sir.
May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Tim Martin, and I, along with my co-counsel, Trigg Salisbury, we represent Great American Insurance Company. And as I expect it comes as no surprise to the court that Great American believes that Judge Goodwin's decision in this case is the subject of appeal is the correct decision with respect to application of the law to the facts of this case. And I say, and I ask the question, why? While we
Great American is the surety.
Yes, Your Honor. And while we recognize that the FAA directs courts to place arbitration agreements on par with any other contractual provision, the FAA should not be used as a tool of coercion. Arbitration is a matter of consent. And in this case, it's our position, and as supported by Judge Goodwin's opinion, that Great American did not consent to arbitration of its unique surety defenses. And I use the term unique.
Now, the language of that bond is pretty broad, though, isn't it? That the subcontract was made a part hereof.
It's referenced, yes, Your Honor.
It's referenced. Which subcontract is, by reference, made a part hereof?
Correct, Your Honor. And as Judge Goodwin found and was our argument, all contract bonds such as these generally incorporate by reference the agreement that the bond is securing the performance of. That's the purpose of the incorporation. The bond doesn't say that it incorporates all of the terms and conditions of the subcontract. It just makes reference to that subcontract because in the very next clause of that bond, it states, now therefore the condition of this obligation is such that if the principal shall promptly and faithfully perform said subcontract, then the obligation is void. In other words, if that contract is performed according to its terms, the surety has no obligations. And that's the purpose of this reference in this bond to the subcontract. And if I might just quote again, as I said, this is concerning Great American as surety, its unique surety defenses.
Why is it a unique defense when we're really talking about the terms of the subcontract, aren't we?
No, Your Honor.
Why aren't we talking about performance under the subcontract, I should say?
That's not what we're talking about.
Why not? Why isn't that an issue here?
Because Great American has no rights under the subcontract. It is not
right,
a party.
Right, but its liability is dependent, isn't it, on as surety on the performance.
Of its principal.
Exactly.
But in addition...
So why isn't there a significant relationship? See, that seems to me to be the real roadblock in your analysis. How do you get beyond the significant relationship test that our court has said is the test that has to be applied?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think the way that you get around that, if you want to call it getting around it...
Or how do you deal with it?
Through, I understand. It's through the analysis that Judge Goodwin performed, and that is... You got to look at the subcontract document itself to see if the scope of the arbitration clause was intended to be imposed upon Great American as surety pursuant to the terms of its bond. Just because there's a relationship between the surety, the principal, and the obligee through the bond doesn't mean that those two documents are dependent on one another. And that goes to this issue and why I continue to use the word unique surety defenses, because those defenses aren't available to our principal, Chapman Martin. They have no right to assert that Great American's obligations have been impaired by the obligee Hinkle Contracting. They have no right to assert that this change order that's part of the issue constituted a material or cardinal change to their subcontract agreement, therefore affecting Great American's liability under its bond. They don't possess those defenses. But
the Supreme Court precedent and our precedent come down pretty strongly on the side of arbitration. You agree with that, wouldn't you?
Yes, Your Honor. And we agree that, and there's no dispute, we haven't raised any dispute, that arbitration of the performance issues that our principal is obligated to perform under that contract, that Great American would be subject to arbitration on those issues because they relate to the subcontract. The issue is, can that duty to arbitrate or obligation to arbitrate then transfer over to our particular surety defenses, which, while they may relate generally to the subcontract, they are not dependent upon the performance obligations.
You're saying a general relationship does not equal a significant relationship?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think you have to look at the terms of the document, as Judge Goodwin did, and determine through the application of contract law whether or not those were intended to be imposed upon Great American. And what I wanted to, if the court would indulge me, there is a treatise on surety and guarantee law. It's called the Restatement of the Law of Third on Suretyship and Guarantee. And in there is a title, Title B, that concerns suretyship defenses. And in the introduction to that, if the court might indulge me, it states that suretyship is essentially a nexus of three relationships. The relationship between the principal obligor and the obligee embodied in the underlying obligation, here the subcontract, the relationship between the secondary obligor and the obligee embodied in the secondary obligation, which is the bond, and a third relationship between the principal obligor and the secondary obligor concerning recovery, subrogation, etc. And it goes on to state, if after the secondary obligor enters into the secondary obligation, the obligee does an act that changes the risk that were the subject of the secondary obligor's assessment, there is the potential for a loss of the secondary obligor.
Right, but what changes the risk, you're saying, was the act that was taken under the subcontract. Isn't that correct?
The obligee's performance of its obligations.
Exactly. So why isn't that a substantial relationship then?
Because those obligations were not owed to Great American under the subcontract. They were owed to Great American under the bond.
But the bond incorporated the subcontract without limitation, didn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. It just
You're
generally,
saying that just doesn't matter?
No, I'm saying that when the terms of the subcontract are reviewed, that those terms indicate that it was not the intent of the parties that Great American would be subject to those. And if I could just go through a couple of those. I mean, the subcontract states on in its very first page, it's entered into between Hinkle Contracting and Chapman Martin. Great American is not a party to it. So the only way that it can be made subject to this subcontract is through incorporation. It then goes on to state, well, it defines the agreement as this subcontract agreement. It then goes on in section 2.2 to define what the subcontract documents are, which then goes on to define other additional documents in section 18.5. And you know what? Nowhere does it include in contract documents bonds. They are not part of this subcontract agreement.
Well, 16.2 mentions the surety specifically.
Yes, Your Honor. But with all due respect to Mr. Hinkle, if he drafted this, that section does not contain a very important part of...
Well, it's part of the arbitration clause.
I understand.
What's missing?
But the thing that's missing is the part that gives Hinkle Contracting the right to get this matter into arbitration. Because even though it mentions the surety, it then imposes an obligation upon Hinkle to move it into arbitration within 30 days after receiving service of subcontractor's complaint. If this was intended to give them the right to bring a claim brought by the surety into arbitration, this thing would have said within 30 days after receiving service of subcontractor's or surety's complaint.
Well, the very first sentence in that paragraph mentions the surety.
Correct.
So couldn't that be read two different ways?
Well,
couldn't that be read against you?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. This contract, number one, was drafted by Hinkle Contracting. So any inconsistency or ambiguity in its terms should be construed against Hinkle Contracting.
That same rule then would apply to you with respect to the bond.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because you wrote the bond.
If there existed.
But all the parties were sophisticated.
I believe so, Your Honor.
I would think.
Yes, I think so. But the bottom line is, this particular term concerning arbitration has missing, not only there, but further on in this same paragraph, the term after receipt of the complaint by the surety. It just talks about after receipt of the complaint by the subcontractor. And that's the whole issue here, is that this is talking about arbitration of claims. When you look at this, it talks about in 16.1 that all claims, disputes, controversies, and matters and questions arising out of or relating to this agreement or the breach thereof is subject to these additional paragraphs. But then when you go back to section 6 of this contract, which is a section dealing with claims, it has clauses concerning claims relating to claims against the owner or claims by the subcontractor against Hinkle Contracting. And it's amazing that in section 6.3.1, it has almost identical language to section 16.1. It says, all unresolved claims, disputes, and other matters and questions between HCC and the subcontractor, not relating to claims included in paragraph 6.2 above, shall be resolved in the manner provided in section 16.2. Again, claims are those related to disputes, claims, matters and controversy between Hinkle and Chapman Martin. There's no mention in these sections concerning Great American or any surety and their obligations. In our brief, we talked about the complaint for declaratory judgment that Great American brought in this case. And again, it was a seeking a declaration as to what our rights, duties, and obligations are under the bond, not the subcontract. And that complaint brought action for or seeking a declaration that the bond is void due to Hinkle's material alteration of the underlying bonded contract obligations, that they're not required.
That had to do with some change order or something?
Yes, Your Honor. And similarly, that Great American's obligations do not flow to anything that arose as a result of the change order. And again, just a review of the bond, it referenced the subcontract, and in the obligation part of it, it clearly states that it guaranteed the performance of the subcontract and did not have any guarantee concerning change orders or other matters related to the subcontract. And there are bonds, from an industry standpoint, that routinely have in them changes clauses that guarantee performance of not only the contract that's identified, but any changes to that contract, and that was not the case here. But more importantly, in the declaratory judgment action, Great American asserted a claim for failure to comply with the terms and conditions of the bond. And that has to do with the defaults that were alleged in this case. There were numerous defaults prior to March of 2009, I believe it was, when Great American finally got notice. But dating back into the prior year, that Great American was not provided notice of. And there is an obligation under the bond and as a matter of law for Hinkle Contracting to have given notice to Great American of its principal's alleged default. If you look at the bond form, it states in the almost the last paragraph, whenever principal shall be and be declared to be in default, then there's various obligations that arise under it. And in this case, even though there were notices of default sent approximately 6-7 months prior to March of 2009, Great American was never provided notice, and that's another basis of our declaratory judgment action. That has absolutely nothing to do with the subcontract. It's strictly related to the bond and the obligations of Hinkle Contracting to Great American under the bond. Judge Goodwin did perform a thorough analysis of the law regarding this area. And quite simply, there are no cases in this circuit that have been called upon to decide this issue. The enforceability of an arbitration provision concerning the surety's defenses. And he did a thorough analysis of the law and the facts in this case. Even the Moses Cone case states that in applying general state law principles of contract interpretation to the interpretation of an arbitration agreement within the scope of the act, due regard must be given for the federal policy favoring arbitration. And we acknowledge that. And that's what Judge Goodwin did. He stated that in applying this court's decision in Atkins versus Labor Ready, Inc., that although arbitration is still favored, there still must be an underlying agreement between the parties to arbitrate. And that's the issue that he looked at in this case. And he did a thorough analysis of these contract terms that we've been talking about. He looked at the entire scope of the subcontract and analyzed these terms so that to give them their intent and meaning pursuant to the entire document. And by doing that, he found that the subcontract had limiting language in it that limited the scope of the phrase arising out of or related to. Included in those were what we've talked about, that Hinkle was required to file or bring an arbitration action within 30 days after the subcontractor had filed a complaint, not the surety. Also, if there was a related action brought, that Hinkle had the right to compel the principal or surety, the subcontractor surety, to join into that, again, within and after they did that, that the subcontractor would dismiss its complaint. And then, equally important, had to do with the selection of the arbitration panel that's already been mentioned here. Under the procedures part of this arbitration, and in, because this claim involved a matter in excess of $250,000, pursuant to the agreement, Hinkle Contracting got to choose one arbitrator, and the subcontractor got to choose one arbitrator. And then those two arbitrators picked an independent third. No right of the surety in the arbitrator panel selection process. And because of that, the court did look at the Tittle decision out of the Fifth Circuit and relied upon that in determining those limiting factors in this subcontract clearly evidence an intent that Great American's defenses that were the subject matter of the declaratory judgment action were not subject to the arbitration clause. Judge Goodwin also looked at the other cases throughout the country and found that there is a split of authority on this issue. And he found that the more well-reasoned approach to take is that that was taken in the Agro decision. And we agree with that because surety defenses, not principal defenses, are something that are unique to the surety. And absent an agreement in this bond that the surety agreed to arbitrate any claims arising under it, we believe that Judge Goodwin found properly that the more well-reasoned approach is to hold that those surety defenses are not subject to the arbitration clause in the underlying subcontract. We would ask the court to affirm Judge Goodwin's decision. We want to thank Your Honors for the opportunity to speak here today. And if you have any further questions, you're welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Martin.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Good to have you here. Mr. Hinkle, you've saved a couple minutes.
Overstay, Your Honor. I reserve five.
Yes, I was
hopefully I won't
casually need referring to five as couple.
Hopefully I won't need them all. Surety defenses may be unique, but they're not sacrosanct. They are subject to the same rules of arbitrability as any other defense. Judge Keenan, I would invite you to read the amended complaint and the amended complaint in a follow-up to your questions about significant relationship. The cases hold that labels don't count. Causes of action don't count. What counts are the factual allegations in the pleadings themselves. And when you read those, and they're numerous, I think you will come to the conclusion that there is indeed a significant relationship between the subcontract and the bond. I think Mr. Martin's argument was inviting you to look to the merits of the defenses themselves. And the law of arbitrability says you don't get there. You don't do that. You look at whether or not there is language and that suggests arbitration and that any doubts are to be resolved in favor of arbitration. And if there's anything to the defenses, that's for the arbitrator, not for the court. There is no limiting language in this bond. None. And I think it bears pointing out that they were the last party who could have changed the lay of the land here. The subcontract was executed. They issued their bond months later. If there was any hesitancy or concern on their part about incorporating the subcontract by reference with the arbitration clause, they could have done something about it at that time. And they did not. There are indeed, and this goes back to the significant relationship, there are indeed points of interaction between the bond and the subcontract in terms of the defenses. cardinal change is one that we pointed out in the briefs that I just want to reiterate real quickly. They say that there was a cardinal change and that that is a defense unique to the surety. That's wrong. The law is clear. Cardinal change is a doctrine that is applicable or available to either a contractor or the surety. So there is a nexus. As to incorporation by reference, we suggest that the correct approach is the approach that was taken in the Rashid case, in the Hanover case from the Western District. The Rashid case was from the Southern District of West Virginia. The Hanover case, and more recently, the developer surety case from the District of Maryland. All of those cases, all three of those cases, decided by district courts within this circuit, and they all are following your precedent for the law of arbitrability and how you handle incorporation by reference, how you handle significant relationship. So there is plenty of authority, not to mention the other districts. The other circuits that have done the same. reading the subcontract, I just simply say arising out of or relating to is held to be broad and expansive, and there's just no getting around that. As to what's missing, Mr. Martin mentioned the 30-day provision. That is a timing provision, Your Honors. And under the Kavner case, timing is a procedural matter. It is not a substantive matter in terms of deciding whether to arbitrate or not. It's procedural. And the same with the selection of arbitrators, which I didn't get a chance to get to last time, and I'd like to come back to it real quick when I was asked what I think the errors below are. And we touched briefly on the fact about Judge Goodwin didn't seem to want to use the CPR rules. But the additional point to that is arbitrator selection is a procedural matter. And the courts have held that that is not something that is dispositive in terms of whether or not something is arbitral. And my 5 minutes are up.
Thank you, Mr. Hinkle.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate one of them. grand traditions of the Fourth Circuit is that after each and every argument, the judges leave the bench and go down and greet counsel. It was begun, lore has it, by Chief Judge Parker back in the 30s of the Fourth Circuit. So we're going to come down and greet counsel and then call the next case.